This podcast is brought to you by Luca Mele, front-end architecture, team leadership, and technical consulting. Over 16 years of experience turning complex challenges into simple, effective solutions. Learn more at lucamele.ch.
Imagine spending millions of dollars and thousands of hours building this completely impenetrable fortress.
Right, like thick concrete walls, the works.
Exactly. You pour the concrete, you install these state-of-the-art security cameras, you hire the absolute best guards in the world. But the locks on the front doors?
Yeah.
You just downloaded those for free from a total stranger on the internet.
Oh, wow.
Right. A stranger who builds locks as a weekend hobby and might just completely abandon the project tomorrow.
That is a completely terrifying prospect in physical architecture.
Hmm.
But, I mean, that is actually the standard operating procedure for almost every digital system we interact with today.
It's wild.
It really is. Mm-hmm. We construct these digital fortresses, but then we outsource the most critical, you know, load-bearing pillars to invisible third parties, just hoping they hold up under pressure.
Well, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are looking at a snapshot of a personal site from Luca Mele. He's a professional who describes himself as a front-end developer, thinker, and doer.
Yeah, and the source material today is pretty brief. It's just a snapshot of his professional website from the year 2026.
Right. And he is currently listed as not available for work, but what he has left behind on this digital footprint is this incredibly clear, highly concentrated blueprint of his whole professional mindset. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because he offers three incredibly dense, contrarian nuggets of wisdom about, you know, software development and team management.
What is crucial to understand up front is that, well, while Luca frames his writing around front-end software development, the underlying philosophy here is really about managing extreme complexity.
Right.
It is about understanding how things break down at scale and how human behavior is usually what drives those breakdowns.
And I want to emphasize that directly to you, the listener. You do not need to be a software engineer or, like, know how to write a single line of code to appreciate the concepts we are exploring today.
Definitely not.
We're really talking about the human bias toward over-preparation and how trying to predict the future usually just ruins the present.
Yeah, it's universally applicable.
Exactly. The themes here, mitigating risk, managing complexity, leading teams, they apply to almost any professional field where humans collaborate to build something. So let's start at the absolute granular level.
Down in the weeds.
Right, the individual lines of code, the way a single person sits down at a keyboard and solves a problem. Luca has a piece of writing titled, Why Yagana Beats Dudry and Why Dudry is Misunderstood.
This is such a powerful place to start because it attacks one of the most, you know, sacred cows in computer science.
Yeah. For those who don't spend their days reading developer forums, DRY is an acronym for don't repeat yourself.
Exactly. And it is usually the very first principle they teach you in coding boot camps and university computer science programs.
Right.
The core idea is that if you find yourself writing the same logic or the same block of code twice in a system, you should pull it out, abstract it into a single reusable piece, and just point to it from multiple places.
I mean, on the surface, that sounds like the literal definition of efficiency. Why write the exact same paragraph twice when you can just write it once, put it in a central file, and link to it?
It sounds perfectly logical. It saves time in the short term, and it feels, I don't know, mathematically elegant.
Yeah, elegant is a good word for it.
But Luca makes a very stark claim here. He writes that most developers learn DRY early and apply it everywhere. But premature abstraction kills more code bases than duplication ever will.
Okay, wait, I have to challenge this slightly.
Sure.
Because we are taught our entire lives that repetition is inefficient, right? That it's amateurish. So is duplication actually a good thing sometimes?
It really can be.
Because I'm picturing this is like premature abstraction is like buying this massive, complex multi-tool for your kitchen when you literally just needed to buy a single knife. It's about solving problems that don't exist yet. Right?
What's fascinating here is that tension between predicting the future and reacting to reality. That's where the other acronym comes in, YAAN, which stands for You Aren't Gonna Need It.
You aren't gonna need it. I love that.
It's so blunt. Luca is pointing out the profound, invisible danger of that premature abstraction you just mentioned. When developers strictly follow the rule of don't repeat yourself too early in a project, they try to write this highly clever, generic code that can handle like five different hypothetical scenarios.
Scenarios that haven't actually happened yet.
Exactly. They're trying to build the ultimate universal solution on day one.
But then reality hits.
Reality always hits.
Yeah.
Let's look at the actual mechanism of how this fails. Imagine you need to build a button for a website that processes a payment.
Okay.
A week later, you need a button that submits a contact form. A junior developer, worshiping that DRY principle, will say, I shouldn't create two separate buttons. I should create one universal button that can accept different colors, different text, animations, security protocols.
They create this massive, complex abstraction.
Right, and they feel very smart. But then the marketing team decides the payment button needs a special drop-down menu and a timer. Yeah, but the contact button needs to remain simple.
Yeah.
Because the developer tied both of those features to the exact same piece of universal button code to avoid repeating themselves, they now have a massive problem.
Because if they modify the universal code to add a timer for the payment,
they accidentally break the contact form.
Right. It just makes me think of, like, trying to design a universal chassis for a vehicle.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
You know, you tell your engineering team, hey, we might want to build cars, boats, and airplanes in the future, and we don't want to design three different frames, so let's just design one single abstracted chassis that can do all three.
Yeah, and you spend a fortune engineering this highly complex frame.
Exactly. But because it has to accommodate the structural integrity for invisible airplane wings and, like, the waterproofing for a boat hull, it ends up being incredibly heavy and awkward.
Right.
So when you finally try to just drive it down the street as a normal car, it handles terribly.
That analogy perfectly illustrates the mechanism of the failure. The universal chassis is solving problems that don't exist yet, using solutions that are far too complex for the problem you actually have right now.
Yeah.
By favoring Yayang Ai, you aren't going to need it. Luca is really advocating for tactical simplicity. Write the simple code to solve today's problem. Build the simple car. Build the simple payment button.
Even if that means you literally copy and paste the code to make the contact button.
Even if it means copying and pasting, duplication is much easier to manage than the wrong abstraction.
Wow.
If you have two slightly similar buttons and their requirements diverge, it is incredibly easy to change one without breaking the other because they aren't tied together.
That makes total sense.
But it requires a lot of discipline and, frankly, humility, to stop yourself from being too clever. Admitting that you do not actually know what the business requirements will be in 6 months means you shouldn't write code that locks you into a specific assumed future.
Okay, so we established this foundational rule for the individual developer. Don't over-engineer your own code. Keep it simple. Wait for the actual patterns to emerge before you try to consolidate them.
Exactly.
But I mean, nobody builds software entirely from scratch anymore. The modern digital world is essentially this giant patchwork quilt.
It really is.
So we transition smoothly from the code you write yourself to the code you borrow from others. Because if over-engineering your own code is a massive risk, what happens when you bring in outside code that someone else wrote?
This brings us to Luca's next core philosophy. We're shifting from the granular code level to the broader application level. The title of his piece is Reduce Your Node Dependencies for Maintainable Apps.
Okay, node dependencies. For the non-technical listener, this is essentially that prepackaged code we mentioned earlier, right?
Right.
It's code written by other developers, usually open source, that you can download and plug into your own project to do a specific job.
And the entire modern software ecosystem relies on this concept. If you need your application to process a credit card, or display an interactive calendar, or, you know, even just format a date correctly, you generally do not write that logic from scratch.
You just install a package.
You install a package, a dependency. It saves an enormous amount of time and allows small teams to build massive applications very quickly.
But Luca issues a very stark warning about this practice. He writes, every package you install is a liability.
Yeah.
He doesn't say every package is a tool or a shortcut or an asset. Liability, that is a heavy financial and legal term. It completely flips the conventional wisdom.
He is aggressively attacking the mindset that views external packages as free productivity. When you bring in an external dependency, you are bringing in code that you do not control.
Right.
You are inheriting the original author's security vulnerabilities, their performance bottlenecks, their future decisions. Luca's goal is to keep the dependency tree lean and the application healthy.
Let's define that term for a second. When we talk about a dependency tree, we aren't just talking about a list of tools in a toolbox, are we? We are talking about a cascade effect.
Yeah, let's trace how a dependency tree actually forms. Say you want to add a nice animation to your app. You find an open source package called Cool Animations, and you install it.
Okay, one dependency.
That is one dependency. But the author of Cool Animations didn't write everything from scratch either. Their package relies on 5 other packages to handle math and timing.
Oh, I see.
And those 5 packages each rely on 10 other packages. So by installing that single animation tool, you have unknowingly pulled hundreds of tiny pieces of code written by hundreds of unknown strangers into the very foundation of your application. That branching structure of reliance, that is the dependency tree.
So what does this all mean? It's kind of like outsourcing parts of your house's foundation to complete strangers, right?
Yeah.
Like you're building this beautiful custom house and someone online says, hey, I already poured some concrete pillars over here. You can just use mine for free. And it gets the house built faster. But if they use cheap, crumbling concrete, your custom house just sinks into the mud.
Or worse.
Right. Or if they decide one day to come take their pillars back, the entire structure collapses in an instant.
And this is not a hypothetical scenario. This happens in the software world with alarming regularity.
Mm-hmm.
A single, tiny, widely used package deep in the dependency tree gets compromised by a malicious actor, and suddenly half the Fortune 500 companies have a major security breach.
That is terrifying.
Or the original author introduces what we call a breaking change.
A breaking change, meaning they update their code, but in a way that is no longer compatible with how your code talks to it?
Yes. They might simply rename a variable from username to userid in an update. Your application automatically pulls in the latest version of their package, looks for username, can't find it, and your entire application crashes in production.
And you spend 3 days frantically searching for the bug.
Only to realize the error wasn't in your code at all. It was in the code you borrowed.
Okay, but let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
Isn't the whole point of using tools like Node to stand on the shoulders of giants? I mean, we don't reinvent the wheel. If my boss needs an interactive calendar built by Friday, and I insist on writing it from scratch because I'm terrified of liabilities, I'm going to miss the deadline and probably get fired. So how do we balance necessary business efficiency with this idea that every single package is a liability?
Well, Luca is not advocating for zero dependencies.
Okay.
He is advocating for intense, critical skepticism. It's an evaluative process of risk versus reward. If you need a massive, complex feature like an interactive calendar or a payment gateway, the reward of using a well-maintained, highly scrutinized package outweighs the risk. You install it.
But what about the smaller things?
That is exactly where the bloat happens. Developers will often install a massive external dependency to solve a tiny, trivial problem. They will download a 2-megabyte library just to sort a list of names alphabetically instead of just writing the 5 lines of code required to do it themselves.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that echoes his first point about yay, BA. You are bringing in an entire Swiss Army knife of code with all its hidden tree of dependencies when you really only needed a small blade. Keeping the dependency tree lean requires a conscious, continuous effort to prune away what isn't strictly necessary.
Health in an application is often defined by what you actively choose to keep out of the system.
Beautifully put.
Okay, so we've scaled up from the individual lines of code where we must avoid premature abstraction and the trap of DRY. We've scaled up to the architectural level, where we ruthlessly defend the borders against external liabilities. Now we have to scale up to the most complex, unpredictable, and fragile system of all.
The
humans building the product. Because managing technical complexity ultimately requires managing people, right? Code does not write itself. Dependencies do not install themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Human decision-making drives all of it.
Which brings us to Luca's final topic. Leading front-end teams, what actually works at scale? And this is where the underlying philosophy really solidifies for anyone in a management role, regardless of whether you work in tech, finance, healthcare, or construction.
Luca identifies a fundamental pivot in identity that has to happen when an individual contributor moves into leadership. He writes, "Technical leadership isn't about writing the best code. It's about creating the conditions where your team consistently ships great software."
Creating the conditions.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we can see exactly what those conditions are and how they solve the problems we just discussed. The leader's primary job is environmental design.
Environmental design.
Yeah. Code bases become tangled messes of premature abstraction because developers are afraid of changing requirements or they want to show off how clever they are. It is the leader's job to foster a culture of psychological safety where the team feels comfortable writing simple, duplicated code today, knowing they won't be punished for having to refactor it tomorrow.
They act as a heat shield.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
They shield the developers from the chaotic demands of external stakeholders. If a product manager is screaming for 15 new features by Friday, individual developers will panic and install 15 new risky dependencies to meet the deadline.
To save time.
Right. But the technical leader steps in, pushes back on the deadline, and protects the health of the application's architecture.
It's an incredible shift in daily responsibilities. Yeah. I instantly think of the transition in professional sports.
Fine.
You know, when a star player retires and becomes a head coach, as the star player, your entire value, your ego, the reason the fans cheer for you, it's all based on your execution. You are the one with the ball. In the tech world, you are the one writing the brilliant algorithms. But when you become the head coach, you are literally not allowed on the field anymore. You cannot touch the ball.
And many brilliant individual contributors fail spectacularly when they are promoted to management for exactly this reason.
And that's the tension I want to explore, because for someone like Luca, whose entire professional brand is built on being a doer, you know, a developer who prides himself on his ability to execute and write brilliant code, how difficult is it to forcibly pry your own hands off the keyboard and focus entirely on creating these unseen conditions for others?
It requires a complete ego death.
Wow.
I mean, it is arguably the hardest psychological hurdle in any technical career, because creating conditions is largely invisible work. When you spend 3 days writing a highly complex, elegant piece of software, you can point to the screen and say, look at what I made. You get that dopamine hit of immediate creation.
But when you create the right environment.
When you create the right environment, the primary metric of your success is just the absence of disaster.
Right.
The code is shipped quietly, efficiently, without drama. The servers don't crash. The dependency tree doesn't collapse. No one is pulling all-nighters.
Everything just works.
Yeah. And it is incredibly difficult to find personal validation in the quiet hum of a well-oiled machine, especially when you're used to being the hero who puts out the fires.
You have to find joy in the facilitation rather than the execution. I mean, if technical leadership were just about writing the best code, you would take your most brilliant programmer, lock them in a basement, slide pizza under the door, and just let them build the whole app themselves.
But at scale, one brilliant programmer cannot outbuild a well-orchestrated, healthy team.
Right.
In fact, the brilliant programmer left alone in the basement is usually the one who builds that wildly over-engineered universal chassis we talked about earlier.
Oh, because there's no one there to review their work and ask, do we really need this?
Exactly. It all weaves together into a singular, cohesive worldview. The leader protects the team from chaos, so the team feels safe enough to protect the application from bloated dependencies, so the application can be built with simple, straightforward, easily maintainable code.
Restraint at the code level, skepticism at the architectural level, and facilitation at the human level.
It is a masterclass in managing complexity by learning how to strategically say no.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating that we can extract this entire operational philosophy from just a brief snapshot of a personal website in 2026.
Right.
And, you know, while Luca's site notes that he's not currently available for work, he definitely leaves the door open for the future.
Yay.
He has an open invitation to connect for projects via his email at info@lucamele.ch, and he lists his LinkedIn and GitHub profiles as well. It's pretty clear that his focus is on building meaningful, well-architected systems when the right opportunity arises, rather than just taking on work for the sake of being busy.
And that intentionality is the core takeaway of this entire deep dive. Whether you are dealing with the code you write, the tools you borrow, or the people you manage, every single addition to a system carries weight.
Absolutely.
Every feature, every dependency, every process.
We all have this natural human bias toward addition. We think adding more contingency plans, more tools, or more layers of management means we are somehow better prepared for the future.
But Luca's work reminds us that addition is often just a form of hidden debt.
Yes.
Exactly. So I want to leave you, the listener, with a final question to ponder based on everything we've unpacked today. Luca Mele warns that premature abstraction kills more code bases than duplication ever will.
Right.
Think about your own life outside of the realm of software development entirely. Look at your own work processes, your daily routines, or even how you manage your household. Where are you overcomplicating things right now by trying to build a universal chassis?
That's a great question.
Where are you exhausting yourself trying to elegantly solve problems that haven't actually happened yet, just in case they might happen in the future? Sometimes the absolute most brilliant thing you can do is stop trying to predict the future, look at the reality of the present moment, and realize you aren't going to need it.